Chapter 5. New Gladiators. Proximo never missed training for the new boys. He could learn so much about them. The more experienced gladiators trained against each other, working with swords and spears and with shields and armor. The new ones were put together into a small arena in the center. One by one, they were given heavy wooden swords and sent in to face the teacher. He had a similar sword. Proximo watched from a short distance. Very quickly, his trained eye could sort the new class into two groups. The fighters were marked with red paint, and the others with yellow. Haken enjoyed his job as gladiator teacher. He took great pleasure in knocking away the swords of his new students and then hitting them hard so they fell onto the dirt. It was soon Maximus's turn to face Haken.
"Spaniard!" Haken called to him.
Maximus went forward slowly. Proximo watched more closely to see what would happen. Maximus picked up the sword and stood facing Haken. Suddenly, everyone, especially Haken, saw that this man was a fighter. There was something about the way he held the sword, the way he stood. But most of all, there were his eyes. There was no doubt. He knew how to fight. Maximus lifted the sword and then dropped it to the ground. He seemed to be saying, "I could kill, but I choose not to." Haken was surprised. Was this an insult? He looked to Proximo for orders. Proximo made a sign to him to continue. Haken struck Maximus across the stomach. Maximus fell forward, but then stood straight again and faced him. Haken looked again to Proximo, and again he was told to continue. This time, Haken struck Maximus across his wounded arm. Maximus almost fell to the ground, but managed to stay on his feet. All the time, he stared straight at Haken, who was becoming very angry. Maximus's thoughts were clear. "I may be low, but I'm not as low as you. I won't kill for sport." Proximo found it very interesting. Haken lifted the sword again, ready to hurt Maximus really badly, but Proximo stopped him. "That's enough for now," he said. "His time will come." He looked behind him to the servant with the pots of paint. "Mark that one," he said. In the heat of the late afternoon, Haken, Juba, the Greek, and the other new gladiators sat on the ground in the shadows. Maximus lay by the wall to one side. He had a small sharp stone and was using it to try to remove the letters SPQR from his arm. Juba called out to him,
"Spaniard, why didn't you fight? We all have to fight."
Maximus did not answer. The young Greek was very frightened.
"I don't fight," he said. "I shouldn't be here. I'm a secretary. I can write in 7 languages.
"Good," said Haken. "Tomorrow you can scream in 7 languages.
The other gladiators laughed. Juba moved closer to Maximus and watched him digging the stone into his skin.
"Is that the sign of your gods?"
he asked. Maximus did not answer. Behind them, Haken was making fun of the Greek.
"Maybe the secretary will be the one who wins his freedom," he laughed.
"Freedom?" the Greek replied. "What do I have to do?"
"You go into the arena and you kill me," Haken replied. "Then you kill him and the African and him and 100 more. And when there are no more men to fight, you're free."
"I can't do that," cried the Greek.
"No," said Haken, suddenly serious. "But I can."
He looked from one gladiator to the next, until his eyes rested on Maximus. Maximus stared back at him, his face like stone. Proximo and his gladiators walked through the streets of the town on their way to the arena. Hakon and the gladiators were chained together, and Proximo's guards walked with them. They were all carrying short swords. The arena was small. It was not like the enormous Colosseum in Rome, although it was there for the same reason, to entertain the people. This arena was just a circle of sandy ground with a lot of seats around it. But the seats were filled with people, and the people were expecting to see blood. Maximus and the other gladiators were taken to a small area behind the seats. Above them were Proximo's seats, next to the seats of several other gladiator trainers. This special position gave the trainers a good view of the arena, and they could also see the gladiators preparing to fight. They discussed their gladiators together before the contest started, who would live and who would die.
"Has the African fought before?" one of the men asked Proximo. "No, first time."
"And that one?" he asked, pointing to Maximus.
"Soldier?" "Him? He's no good," said Proximo. "But I have an idea."
He called down to his guards.
"Chain the Spaniard to the African," he said.
The other man was not sure about Maximus. He liked the look of the Spaniard.
"I think he'll live through this fight. You think he'll die," he said. "Let's put money on the result. 1,000? "Against my own man, I don't do that," said Proximo.
"And if I make it 5,000? Proximo thought about it. That was a lot of money. Proximo liked to see his new boys before they went to fight. A guard called for silence as he walked into the waiting area.
"Some of you are thinking that you won't fight," Proximo said. "And some that you can't fight. They all say that until they're out there."
He pulled a sword down from a shelf.
"Push this into another man, and the crowd will cheer and love you. You may even begin to love them back."
He stuck the point of the sword in a table.
"In the end, we are all dead men. Sadly, we cannot choose how. But we can decide how we accept that end, so we are remembered as men. You go out into the arena as slaves. You come back, if you come back, as gladiators."
Outside, the crowd was getting impatient. Before he left, Proximo walked down the line of men, saying who must be chained together. They were all put in teams of two, and it soon became clear that the method was to chain a red to a yellow. Each good fighter was with a certain loser. Hakon was chained to the crying Greek secretary. Maximus, a loser because he had refused to fight Hakon, was chained to Juba. Maximus turned to look at the closed door. From the other side, they could hear the shouts of the crowd. Suddenly, Maximus bent down and picked up a little sand from the ground, then let it fall through his fingers. Juba watched him, but did not understand. When Maximus stood up again, he looked different. He was ready for battle. Outside, the crowds were cheering and shouting. There was the sound of drums. Everyone stood anxiously waiting. Suddenly, the doors to the arena crashed open and sunlight poured in. For a few seconds, the men were blinded by it. There were trained gladiators already in the arena, waiting, their swords and spears ready for killing. The new gladiators ran out, some to immediate death. Side by side, their chain loose between them, Maximus and Juba ran out into the arena. It was not a fair fight. The new men had only one small sword and no armor. The experienced gladiators had much better equipment. Maximus and Juba fought together. Juba was surprised to see that his partner, marked with the yellow of cowards, was fighting bravely. All the anger and pain inside Maximus had come out, and he was better than any man in the arena. He knew this was not his day to die. Not like this. Together, they killed the first pair of gladiators. Others came to fight them, and for a second, Juba lost his sword as he attacked. Maximus pulled him clear of the other man's sword and then struck the attacker hard. His sword point came out the man's back. He and Juba worked together as a team. They were strong and fast, and many of the attacking gladiators were killed by them. Hakon fought with great power. The Greek was soon killed, and Hakon cut off the man's hand so it was easier for him to move about in the arena. Proximo watched everything closely. The crowd quickly realized that Juba and Maximus were a strong fighting pair and began to cheer them. Soon, all the attackers were on the ground. Juba and Maximus looked around and then at each other. But then, as they began to relax, one of the gladiators tried to get to his feet. They ran forward together and pulled their chain tightly around his neck. The fighting had ended. The crowd were on their feet, cheering. Maximus looked at the many bodies around him and then at the excited faces of the crowd. It made him sick that people were entertained by the sight of men killing other men. He walked toward the entrance and threw his sword into the crowd. It only made them cheer louder. Proximo was pleased with the day's work. He had lost a lot of money, but he had found a new fighter. Chapter 6. Caesar's Arrival in Rome. It was a special day in Rome, a holiday. 50 black-armored royal guards marched down the main street of Rome, followed by hundreds of men on horses. Behind them came the royal carriage. Commodus, the new emperor of Rome, was coming home. His sister Lucilla was sitting next to him. Another 50 guards marched behind them. Close to the royal carriage, on a beautiful black horse, rode Quintus, the new commander of the royal guards. Commodus had told the Senate that he was now the commander of the Roman army, and that the army was loyal to him. Many senators doubted it, but there was no one in Rome with enough power to take control. And so, nothing could stop Commodus. The people had been told that their new emperor would arrive in Rome on this date at this time. The city was cleaned up, and purple flags were hung outside the most important buildings. The citizens of Rome lined the streets at the time he was expected. The crowd was not very big, and it was not very enthusiastic. They cheered, but not loudly. Commodus was young and had no experience, but the people could forgive that. They were more worried about the stories they had heard, that Commodus was selfish and cruel. He was not his father, and they had loved Marcus Aurelius. Commodus had much work to do to make himself popular and win the support of the people. Ahead, on the steps of the Senate, a group of senators stood waiting. Falco, Gaius, and Gracchus were among them. Lucius, Lucilla's 8-year-old son, was standing with them. Senator Gracchus, a white-haired man in his 60s, was not happy about the new emperor.
"He is entering Rome like a hero. But what has he ever done?" he said.
"Give him time, Gracchus," Falco answered. "He's young. I think he could do very well."
"For Rome?" asked Gracchus. "Or for you?"
Falco turned to Lucius.
"It's a proud day for all of us, isn't it, Lucius?" he said. "I'm sure Senator Gracchus never thought he'd live to see such a day."
Lucius watched as the royal carriage came closer, then ran down the steps when it arrived. He jumped up into his mother's arms, and she held him tight and kissed him. Commodus raised his arm in salute to the crowd, but he could see that the crowd was small and the cheering was only polite.
"Rome greets her new emperor," Falco said. "Your loyal people are here to welcome you, sir."
"Thank you, Falco," replied Commodus, "for bringing out the loyal people. I hope they weren't too expensive."
He turned to Gracchus.
"Ah, Gracchus," he said, "the friend of Rome."
"We are happy
that you are home, Caesar, Gracchus said. Then he became more serious. There are many problems that need your attention. In the royal palace, Commodus was meeting with the senators. He was following his sister's advice and listening to them patiently. Senator Gracchus had a list of problems in the city. He was anxious that Commodus look at them without delay. And here are some suggestions from the Senate. Ideas for solving the problems, he said. Commodus walked around the room, losing interest. Lucilla listened carefully and watched her brother. Finally, Commodus could not listen any longer.
You see, Gracchus, this is exactly the problem, he interrupted. My father spent too much time listening to the Senate, and the people were forgotten.
The Senate is the people, Caesar, said Gracchus,
chosen from among the people, to speak for the people.
I doubt many of the people eat as well as you do, Gracchus, or have the beautiful home you have, Gaius. I think I understand my own people,
Commodus said.
Would Caesar kindly teach us from his own great experience, replied Gracchus.
I call it love, Gracchus. I am their father. The people are my children, said Commodus.
He was getting angry.
Lucilla stepped forward. Senators, my brother is very tired, she said. Please, leave your list with me. Caesar will do everything that Rome needs.
She called for a slave to show them out. The senators left, but they were not pleased. It was not a good start for the new emperor. When they had gone, Lucilla turned to Commodus.
The Senate can be useful, she said.
How?
He replied.
They only talk.
He moved to a window and looked out over the great city.
It should be just you and me and Rome. There has always been a Senate, said Lucilla.
Rome has changed, he answered. It takes an emperor to rule an empire.
Of course, but leave the people their traditions.
It had been a tradition for the last 200 years to believe that the Senate ruled Rome through the emperor. But everyone knew the real situation. The army held the political power in Rome, and the real ruler was whoever the army was loyal to. Commodus's thoughts were moving ahead.
All the years of my father's wars gave the people nothing, but still they loved him. Why? They didn't see the battles. They knew nothing of the people we fought and killed, or their countries, he said.
They care about the greatness of Rome, said Lucilla.
And what is that? Can I touch it? See it?
It's an idea. It's something they want to believe in, said Lucilla.
Commodus was suddenly excited.
I'll give them something to believe in. I'll give them great ideas, and they'll love me for it,
he said, raising his arms to the sky.
I will give them the greatest ideas, the most wonderful Rome ever.
There were artists at work in the streets, painting enormous pictures on walls. Their pictures showed scenes of gladiators and wild animals fighting, and the sand on the floors of the arenas was red with blood. Crowds stood and stared, watching as the pictures were completed. This was the start of the advertising for Commodus's new idea.
Games,
Gaius complained to Gracchus and a group of other senators as he joined them in a cafe.
150 days of games!
The senators watched the wall painters working outside the cafe.
He's smarter than I thought, said Gracchus quietly.
Smart, said Gaius. All of Rome would laugh at him if they weren't so afraid of his guards. You can't really think that the people will forget Rome's problems and sit back to enjoy these games, he asked. It's completely mad.
I think he knows what Rome is, Gracchus replied. He will give them magic, and then they'll have something else to think about.
He will take their lives, and he will take their freedom. And still they will shout and cheer. He shook his head sadly. The beating heart of Rome isn't in the walls of the Senate. It's on the sand of the Colosseum. He will give them death, and they will love him for it. The other senators knew he was right. It was a lesson from history. But they did not know that Commodus was planning better and longer games than any emperor before him. And it was all for one reason. Commodus knew he had no choice. He and the Senate did not agree about anything, and he could not be certain of their support. So he had to look beyond the Senate and go straight to the people for his power. The games were the key. As Lucilla had said, the people must have their traditions. And he would not deny his citizens their traditional games. Sitting behind the senators in the cafe, with his back to them, was a small man. None of the senators noticed him, but he was close enough to hear everything they said. The face of the listener was quite ordinary, except that his right eye was missing. He did not see well with only one eye, but he could hear perfectly, and he had a good memory. He was able to collect a lot of information, and he was paid well to repeat it to other ears.